Well, after a long, beautiful summer, theater season is about to go into full swing again. So I'm here with the chair of the Western Michigan University Theater Department, Joan Harrington, as well as professor of music theater, Jay Burkow. And together, we'll all go through the 9 productions of the 2019-2020 Western Michigan University Theater season. Welcome, Joan, and welcome, Jay.
Thank you for having us.
This season is called Let's Talk, and I'd like to start with you, Joan, on what that means to you and how it reflects the season.
Well, it's let's talk it over, talk it up, talk it out, talk it through. And we think of theater as a place that can inspire conversation and make space for people to have it. And when you look at the landscape now, regardless of where your politics lie, you may find it very difficult to have a conversation with anybody about anything. We've become so polarized. So theater presents alternative points of view, allows you to see other people in their lives who may be different from your own. And we're trying to create space to say, oh, what do you think? How do you feel about that? What would you do about that? We'll have a number of events throughout the season specifically geared for creating a space for conversation. So, for example, our first show, 1984, we'll have a panel discussion following one of the performances. We'll have a talk back and a special guest for our production of Gem of the Ocean, Blood at the Root in the spring, Tribes at the spring. We're just going to specifically invite people from the community and invite the audience to stay and talk with us and let us know what they think, and so they can hear what other people think.
You're saying theater has a special role to play in dialogue between people of different viewpoints. Has that been true in your lifetime? Is that something that...
It has been true in my lifetime. I have seen plays whose characters are very different from how I am and in how they think, in their world perspectives. And there's something about being able to relate to that character, the play giving you the opportunity to stand in their shoes for you to say, oh, well, I never really looked at it that way, or I never really thought of it that way, or... I like that person. I feel for them, even though I thought I might not, or I didn't think I would understand where they were coming from. And then there's a different character on the stage with an opposing point of view. And you think, oh, well, that's also valid, and that's also interesting. So theater can be very good at presenting juxtaposition of ideas that make us think.
I'll tell one little anecdote, because I've carried this with me for my whole professional career, really, because when I'm directing a show, I like to frequently, particularly when I'm in a professional situation and the audience doesn't know who I am, I like to kind of walk around at intermission kind of in disguise and listen to people's conversations just to hear what they're saying about the play. And I was directing a production of La Cage aux Folles in this very conservative community in Vermont years and years ago. And... for me, the play, the musical, is very much about a gay family, about a gay couple, and they're raising a child, and all the drag and the fun and the frivolity of the piece really is there to kind of make it entertaining. But ultimately, it's a family story, and it's really quite beautiful and very affirming. And as a gay man, I find it very affirming myself. So I'm walking around during intermission, and I see this mature couple, and it's one of those couples where you know that the wife dragged the husband there, and he said, I don't know what this piece is about. And she says, I don't know, let's just go. So she says, what do you think of the show? And he says, these faggots are very endearing. And I said, that's fantastic. In 1 hour of a musical comedy, here's this man who obviously is bringing kind of a history of some homophobia with him to the theater, and yet he's engaged in the story, he's developing some kind of connection with the characters, and without it being kind of a political statement or a discussion, I think he was changing his ideas about people and families just from enjoying a show. So that's one of the reasons I've always done theater.
Have you told that story ever since?
I have. It was a beautiful moment.
It actually starts with the performers. They might be cast in a role. You know, we did a show a couple of years ago called Good Death, which was about the issue of right to die. And the students came in with some really opposing viewpoints. And sometimes the characters they were playing was not the person who represented the viewpoint that they have held their whole life. And they must honestly and truly embody that character and speak their words and feel in their heart what that character feels in their heart. And that can really be tremendously transitional for a young artist as well. And then they bring that to the audience.
Well, the season kicks off in September, starting September 20th with 1984. And I think the last time I read this book must have been in high school. George Orwell's famous dystopian future book. Tell me about this production.
Well, I will defer to Jay, who's directing.
I am directing the show. Every once in a while, I direct a play, not a musical, and we're actually bringing in a guest director who's going to be doing our production of Urinetown later this semester. So I'm directing 1984, and we are actually hot and heavy into rehearsals. One of the things that kind of struck us as a department, and me particularly as an artist, recently in the last 2 or 3 years, is I've been increasingly hearing the adjective Orwellian refer to a great number of elements in our world right now. And the more often I heard it, the more often I said, you know, I think 1984, the message of Orwell and what he's talking about as you're dealing with a society that's kind of breaking down and becoming heatedly nationalistic and it's a warning. It's a warning about what we need to watch out for as we're in political situations that become restrictive and when we're actually working to take away people's rights. So it felt very timely. I went and reread the novel about a year and a half ago, and parts of it were literally so powerful, poignant, and timely that I couldn't believe this novel was written so long ago. And this adaptation, there are quite a few different adaptations that are out there right now. There was a recent Broadway adaptation, which we were not able to obtain the rights to. And this adaptation, both Joan and I felt, was very theatrically interesting. It's told all through flashback, and the characters who are actually interrogating Winston act out his past, act out the story that leads up to the interrogation. It is brutal. It is dark. And if there is a ray of hope that comes out of the piece, it's mostly to wake up the audience, wake up the cast, have a conversation about what the story is telling us, and make sure that we don't just kind of sit back and let things progress, that everyone needs to be proactive about the future of the world that they're living in.
What actually does happen in the action of this play? What is the storyline?
The story of the play is about this gentleman named Winston Smith, who works in, basically he's revising history. It's his job to go to the Ministry of Information and change the facts because we have alternate facts. For example, the fictional country that the story is about is called Oceania, and they are at war with another country called Eurasia. And in the middle of the play, they decide they're not at war with Eurasia, they're at war with East Asia. So they're going to get rid of all the information that says they were ever at war with Eurasia and say they were now at war with East Asia. And it's that kind of the idea that facts are he who controls the present controls the past, he who controls the past controls the future. And so if you what your present is transmutable. And so that's his job. Winston's job is to kind of make sure that the past aligns with the present, even if that's not true. And he now knows that things are changing and no one else seems to recognize this. He meets this woman named Julia, who is kind of an iconoclast, and she's a leader of the revolution against the government. They all get arrested, and he is tortured into letting go of all of his beliefs and ideas and realizing that they were all a dream and that he, in fact, loves Big Brother, who is our kind of leader of this world. And it's very dystopian, and ultimately the Orwell story is not particularly hopeful. Orwell wrote the book mostly about the Stalinist government in Russia and the Soviet Union in the 1940s. But it seems very poignant now and about a lot of regimes. I was actually reading an article about Brazil, and they described some of the comments that were being made down there as Orwellian. This was just yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What a powerful way to get started this season.
It's been fascinating working with students on the show. They have very strong opinions. A wide diversity of opinions. And one of the things that we've been trying very hard to do in our rehearsal process is to, if there are disagreements within the cast, and there have been, to respect each other's opinions. and to realize that our job is to do the play. Our job is to this is a very thought-provoking piece, and our job is to pay honor Orwell, honor his original intent, and let the audience think.
Well, 1784 might not be a terrible title for your follow-up production of Amadeus, which is centered around the rivalry of Salieri and Mozart. Yes. How does this fit into a season about communicating with disparate viewpoints?
Well, this play sort of looks at the role of the artist in society, the responsibility of the artist in society, how the artist serves the state or doesn't serve the state. So it does have political overtones to it, but it's also, we don't want a season in which every piece...
we just did 1984.
We just did 94, so we thought we'd give the audience a break with some beautiful music and some really fun characters. It was originally a Broadway play. It was made into a movie. More people are probably familiar with the film.
I know I am. Yeah.
It had spectacular roles and just really delicious people in the play, and the relationship between the two men, and just a fascinating story of two incredibly complicated artists and the difference between real creative genius and the challenge that poses to people who have a lifelong commitment to developing skill and artistry that they work at and they work at and they work at, and then other people arrive without any of that trial, any of that time, but an incredible gift.
Right.
That leads to a glorious moment or a glorious career with what seems to the other people very little effort.
in a lifetime of being a musician and writing music, Salieri has all the experience required to recognize how good Mozart is and feel it so much more keenly.
Correct. And then he has to make a choice about whether he positions him as the genius that he is or not.
There's a parallel. There's a parallel in the musical Sunday in the Park, too, where there's a kind of a more mature artist who has a great deal of jealousy for kind of a younger genius, and kind of like, wow, why did God gift this young genius who has no discipline and no seeming commitment, yet they're a genius, and here I am working day and night to create something important, and this guy just kind of, oh, let's try this. And that's the great fun of the piece. I mean, Amadeus, he's a mess. He's hilarious. He's bizarre. He's crazy. He's completely undisciplined, and he's a genius, and he's fun, and he's a troublemaker. And here's poor Salieri just working in the trenches,
and
jealous and frustrated.
And he has to
ruin
him.
And eventually potentially crazy. So it's a great piece about professional jealousy and about creativity and arts and music. And it has one of my favorite lines when Mozart starts doing this thing where he starts explaining how he's going to do this piece where it's just counterpoint, and it's going to have one part, two parts, three parts, 12 parts of counterpoint. And then the Duke says, oh, Mozart, too many notes.
A little notey. would one of you tell us which theater it's going to be staged in, and what are the dates?
Amadeus will be in our Shaw Theater, and it opens on October 4th and plays through the 13th.
Full period costumes.
Full period costumes. It will be glorious. I am speaking perhaps less objectively, but the costumes created by our department, designed by both our faculty costume designer, Catherine Wagner, and her students, and built, all hand-built, machine-built by our students. We don't rent costumes. We don't bring them in. I don't know if anyone saw Shakespeare in Love last year. Spectacular, spectacular gowns for the central character. And it's extraordinary work for 20-year-olds. It's extraordinary work for 50-year-olds. But coming out of a 20-year-old, these designs, these constructions they create the patterns, they drape. So they design it, and then they have to figure out how to make it. and then they make it. It's pretty amazing.
Joan Harrington and Jay Burkhauer from the Western Michigan University Department of Theater. And we're talking about the 2019-2020 season, which has an overall title of Let's Talk. And we're about to talk about Urinetown, the musical, which starts in late October and continues through November 3rd. I don't know a thing about...
You don't know Urinetown?
Oh my goodness. It's so much fun.
It's a modern classic, but
such a great concept.
Urinetown is it's a dark satire about
which is hysterically funny.
Fictional world in which water has become very, very... there's a huge water shortage to the point where you're not allowed to flush a toilet. And so you can't have a toilet in your own home, and you can't go to the bathroom behind a tree. So you have to go to these public facilities for which you pay to pee. And so now you've created this class of people who literally can't afford to go to the bathroom. And so it's this very dark satire about the world. It musically and kind of theatrically, it kind of pokes fun at a lot of those kind of 1930s WPA, funded kind of semi-socialist theatrical pieces that happened in the 1930s. But this kind of makes fun of all musical forms. It's like a little West Side Story send-up. And so it sends up theater in a way to tell this story about this young man and this young woman who are kind of on the side of good, trying to defeat the evil water hoarders in the society. The score is brilliant. It's hilarious. There's a little bit of a meta quality to it. They kind of, the characters are certainly aware that they're in a musical, and there's a lot of jokes about the fact that if you were going to name a musical Urinetown and expect people to pay money to see it, that's not such a smart idea. So it makes fun of itself. It's hilariously funny. We're very excited to bring Paul Stancato to campus. He's a guest director. He's the artistic director of the Timberlake Playhouse in Illinois and has been a New York-based director. Most recently, he actually directed one of our alums in the national tour of another spoof musical called Spamilton, which kind of spoofs Hamilton and Spamalot. And so we're thrilled to have Paul with us for about half the semester. And he's also actually going to be teaching some master classes and working with the music theater juniors on their class as well.
So come and give your coins to me. Write your name here in the record book. The authorities will want to look if you've been regular with me. If you've paid the proper fee the privilege to pee.
But Miss Pennywise,
I said no buts, Bobby. You're a sweet looking boy and I'd like to keep you around, but this man ain't coming in without paying. Not this time.
I can't wait much longer, Bobby. There's no telling what I might do.
You think you got some kind of right?
Kind of right.
You think you come in here and go for free?
Stag-a-freebie.
The only thing you'll get is no for free.
Stag-a-tory.
I'm a business gal,
you see.
I sell the privilege to pee.
It's a Privilege to Pee from Urinetown, which will be directed by Paul Stancato and opens October 25th. Details at WMUtheater.com. And I'm with the director of the WMU Theater Department, Joan Harrington, and professor of music theater, Jay Burkhauer. And so far, we've looked at the opening production, 1984, on September 20th, Amadeus, October 4th, and Urinetown, October 25th. Before we move on to the next production, I'd like to ask about what you hear out in the world of university theaters about Western's program and how it's regarded among your peers.
Well, I think the two things I think that are probably testaments to the reputation and success of the program are, one, the number of students who know about it and have a strong desire to be part of it, such that it is extremely competitive to get into the program. I think the music theater program, for example, takes less than 8% of the students who apply to that program. And all of our programs are competitive. And I think that speaks to, students have done their research and they look at what our program has to offer and decide that this is where they want to go to school, but then they really must compete in all areas of study: acting, music theater, arts management, stage management is a very competitive program, design and technical production. And one of the things that they're looking at, which I think also speaks to the quality of the program, is the success of our graduates. what they're doing after they graduate, how soon they're working, the number of venues that they're working on, how many of them are the performers are out and designers and stage managers are out working very prestigious national tours, how many of the ones who are going to L.A. are having success on TV series and in films, how many are creating their own web series, how many are becoming successful directors. And if you really look at our alumni, I think it's a pretty extraordinary record of how many of them are staying in the industry and doing serious work and making their living at it, right? Because it's not an industry in which it's easy to make a living, even if you are working. You really need to work consistently, and you need to work in an array of arenas. So I think those are two things that really speak to the program's quality. And we think that the experience that the students have while they're with us is pretty amazing.
We have students, graduates, who are designing shows all over the country now. One of our design program is extraordinary. We are an all undergraduate program. And so as such, the designers have the opportunity to design main stage shows. I'm frequently working, and so is Joan when she's directing, frequently working with undergraduate designers who are designing the sets and costumes and lighting and sound. And it's a rare opportunity for young designers to actually have a portfolio of work that's been fully realized.
Yeah.
And that's unusual. And then just the number of our students who are currently performing. Joan and I are racing off to Chicago. One of our alums is currently in Hamilton in Chicago. And then actually next weekend I'm going to Detroit because two of our former students are on the national tour of Cats.
Yeah. Getting back to the season, let's look at the fourth production of the 2019-2020 season. And this is by a very important playwright of color, August Wilson.
Yes.
And would you introduce this?
Sure. Well, August Wilson committed himself as a playwright to write a 10-play cycle, so one play for each decade of the 20th century chronicling the African-American experience from 1904. This is the first play, Gem of the Ocean, the earliest, not the first one he wrote, but the earliest in the series. And so we'll be producing that. It opens on November 15th, and we'll be starring one of our faculty members, an extraordinary actress, Dwandra Lampkin, will be playing the leading role. She's playing Aunt Esther, who at this point in the series is already 285 years old. She is a mystical character who is woven throughout the cycle and really represents for August Wilson our responsibility to acknowledge our past in order to be able to move forward. Sort of an interesting parallel sort of with 1984, right? That if we don't acknowledge where we came from, then we really can't chart where we're going. And so Aunt Esther represents that history embodied in the August Wilson play cycle. This play, as I said, it's the first one in the cycle. It's set in 1904, and it really looks at, as many of Wilson's plays do, the journey to the New World as slaves, and it's also 1619, where we are at the 400th anniversary of the arrival of slaves in this country. Some tried it a little bit earlier, but that's sort of our acknowledged date for the arrival of slaves in this country, which is one of the reasons that we chose to do this show at this time. And it's also part of a larger community effort. The Studio Museum in Harlem is doing a traveling show called Black Reflections that will be on display at the KIA this fall. And there's a lot of activity around the campus. And in collaboration with some of our colleagues, we're bringing in a best-selling author, Ibram Kendi, whose new book just came out about 10 days ago, and it's called How to Be an Anti-Racist. And it's a fabulous book, and he is also a professor and a brilliant, brilliant speaker. And he'll be here November 15th at 4 o'clock. He'll give a talk in Knaus Hall. That will be on our website as well. And then he will also lead a post-play discussion on the opening night of Gem of the Ocean. So we're really excited that he's going to be part of this. And it's really, there are things happening on campus to commemorate the 400th anniversary and things happening in the community. So we felt it was really important for us to be part of that larger conversation and to contribute to that in the way that we could.
if you're listening and are thinking, I need to hear that again, or I want to check out that information, WMUtheater.com is the website. That's with an R-E. And you can also talk to the box office people at 387-6222. Follow the Department of Theater on Facebook and Instagram or Twitter as well. So you'll be hearing much more about both the productions and the special events that are tied to them. August Wilson's Gem of the Ocean being the fourth production. And when does that production go up?
That show opens on November 15th and plays through November 24th. So it'll come down just in time for Thanksgiving.
So just after Thanksgiving.
Just after Thanksgiving.
Is
wow,
next...
this fall went so quickly.
I know. Well, there's an exciting finish to the fall.
There's exciting. Yeah, big Broadway finish.
Big Broadway finish. That's right.
It's never considered a Christmas concert, but it almost is sort of a Christmas gift.
Yes, it's our gift to the community as we bring in a fabulous Broadway performer to share their town.
Yeah, many years ago, Joan and I decided that, it was a great opportunity to offer to our students. Every year, the senior graduating class of musical theater performance students go to New York City and perform a showcase for casting directors and agents. And it's a way to get their careers jump-started and get a chance to perform in New York. And a lot of our students have managed to sign agents right out of showcase, and it's been a very advantageous thing. And a number of years ago, we started bringing in a pretty recognized Broadway performer to be in residence for a week, work with the students on their showcase material, and then do a cabaret where the showcase is like the opener for the act for this well-known Broadway performer. Initially, my idea was that this would be someone that the students could aspire to be in about maybe 10 years or so. And then we got very spoiled. We brought in a number of Tony Award nominees and winners. This year, we are so thrilled to have with us Katie Huffman. She's, in fact, our third Tony winner that we've had come to Western to do this. She was the original Ula in The Producers. More recently, she played Mama Morton on Broadway in Chicago. And she's actually right now working on a one-woman show about Peggy Lee, which is fantastic because if you meet Katie, I'm hoping she's going to sing some of the stuff from her Peggy Lee show because it's extraordinary. She sounds just like Peggy Lee. So we're thrilled to have her with us. We've had amazing artists every year. Last year we had the brilliant, effervescent Brenda Braxton, and we could not be more thrilled to have Katie Huffman with us this year.
She'll be here for three nights, December 5, 6, and 7. Katie Huffman on Next Stop Broadway. And as you said, it's Katie Plus because you get to see the senior class also showing their stuff. Yep. On these productions. Details again at WMUtheater.com. And now we're in the new year.
Did you have a nice Christmas? It was lovely.
Good holiday. Did you have some
Welcome
time
back.
Off?
Yeah. The new year starts January 24th with a production of Blood at the Root. And I think we're back into drama territory.
We're back into drama. Dominique Morisseau is a Michigan native from the East Side, from Detroit. Very successful playwright. Her star has really risen tremendously in the last 5 years. This is a play that's based on a true incident that happened at a high school where some students had been provoked when some nooses were found hanging off the trees on their school campus, and a fight that ensued among the students that resulted in a murder charge against one of the students and a question about racial injustice within the criminal system. This is an interesting piece for us also because a number of years ago, Dominique Morisseau had an idea for this play and went to the graduate program at Pennsylvania State to develop it. And one of the students in the original cast was one of our alumni who had just started in that program who got to help guide and develop the original script. It performed in South Africa. It performed in New York. So it's kind of special for us to welcome back this particular project because one of our own had a hand in its creation when Dominique was first putting it together. Mark Learman will direct that. That's in our York Theater. And it just looks at really how miscarriage of justice, racial double standards, relationships between men and women, class struggle, sort of a microcosm of what I think a lot of young people in our society are experiencing and the challenge of not being able to find common ground, that we're just not giving them, again, a place where they can find common ground, that we're telling them that they're different, that they need to be separate, that their relationships are inherently antagonistic. And just asking us to look at it does not provide any solutions. Mm-hmm. Again, it just says, look at this. And it's another one of play for which we will, you know, have a conversation, afford the opportunity to the audience to say, well, what did you think? It's really just, and the idea of those conversations is really just like, what did you think? What do you want to say?
And as you mentioned before, a great challenge for young actors fulfilling roles, some of which are lovable and some which are not.
Correct. Yes, there are some not lovable characters in this play. And that's hard. That's hard because everybody wants to be the character on stage who everybody likes.
Yeah.
So that is hard for, an 18, 19-year-old to be the really, not the fun jerk, but, a character who is making some really, really difficult choices that are negatively impacting on other people.
When you do mount productions that are challenging, that can challenge beliefs, that can create this kind of dialogue or force us to think about outside our comfortable little worlds, do you get reaction from them? You have devoted theater goers that love WMU Theater.
We do. And we get, when we do a show, we get people who, same show, someone thinks it's the best thing they've ever seen. Someone did not care for it at all, and that couldn't be because maybe they saw it before and what we did was different from what they had seen before, so they were disappointed. Maybe it challenged them to reconsider their views in a way that made them uncomfortable, and so that isn't something that they want to do. Edward Albee has a great quote where he says, if you go to the theater, something should happen to you. Maybe somebody should be asking you some questions about your values or the way that you think about things. And I think that's often what we try to do. When someone says to you, well, why do you think that? Do you really think that? You have a moment where you think, oh, get defensive and maybe I don't want to talk about it or maybe I don't want to defend it or maybe I don't want to reconsider. So there are a couple of shows this season that say, well, let's talk about it.
Let's
see why you think
beliefs.
That. Yeah. Let's examine our beliefs. Let's see if, you can still believe that, but maybe you can still make space to acknowledge that someone else believes something different and that might be okay, that you could coexist in the world even though you have disparate perspectives.
Oh, my God. Wait, this is America. We're not supposed to be so open-minded.
We're not going to do that now. So yes, we put together a balanced season. So people can pick and choose the things that they think might more appeal to them. You'll see that the show that follows Blood at the Root, Restoration Comedy, is in
sexy, fun.
Sexy, silly, just fun piece. So we try to say, okay, now you've done this. You had some talk about something really serious. Why don't you come and just have a night off? just come and play with us and enjoy that.
Blood at the Root is January 24th through February 9th, and Restoration Comedy.
It's a fabulous premise about a man who is unfaithful to his wife, who just decides he's going to leave her and go on this hedonistic binge across Europe. And then he hears of her death. So he decides he can come back. Only she's not really dead. She just put that out there to see if she could re-seduce him without his noticing.
And the funny, fun kind of double entendre of the title of the piece in itself, because Restoration Comedy is a kind of a period of world drama or world comedy, where like 17th century comedy, where it was very known to be silly and fun and playful and quite sexy and a little bit tongue in cheek, and so this is actually a contemporary adaptation of two classic, hilarious Restoration comedies, coincidentally about the restoration of a marriage. So it's, it's a kind of a fun double entendre, and it should be wickedly fun and sexy and
again, fabulous costumes.
Yeah.
Just fabulous costumes.
And you'll probably get to see a corset or two.
In the original Restoration comedies, one of the reasons they were so popular was because it was when they invented the breeches roles, in which for some reason in the play, a woman would dress like a man, which meant they got to see a woman on the stage wearing pants. So they were extremely popular from that point of view in their original time.
This starts on February 7th. In which theater will this be staged?
That's going to be in the D. Terry Williams Theater.
So it's a more intimate setting?
A more intimate setting, yes.
And it slightly overlaps with Blood at the Roots. So mm-hmm. Details at wmutheater.com, 387-6222, to talk to a live person about the productions and purchase tickets that way. I'm with Joan Harrington and Jay Burkow. And, well... gosh, there's only two more to.
No, I know. We're already in March. I don't know how that happened.
The flowers are coming up.
Who wants to talk about Tribes?
Well, Joan should talk about Tribes because she's directing Tribes.
I'm actually directing Tribes by Nina Raine. I was teaching. This is a play I have long loved, but I was teaching a class last year. And my students were giving presentations on different aspects of the theater that interested them. And one of my students gave a presentation about the rising arena of theater by and for people who cannot hear, deaf theater. There was a production on Broadway of Spring Awakening. And in the course of giving the presentation, she was talking about the fact that she had a sibling who was born deaf, but that her parents had never learned sign language, had expected her sibling to learn to read lips, which is the story of this play. And hearing her tell this story was so impactful in that moment that I thought, this is a play that we need to do, and we need to do now. And again, looking at where is the place for people in our society who have challenges in terms of the way our world is designed. So at the center of this play is a young man named Billy, who's growing up in a family that talks all the time to each other, over each other, nonstop, and he was born deaf. And in an effort to normalize him, they have chosen not to learn sign language and therefore not acknowledge really that he can't hear. So the family can just pretend that since he can read their lips, he can hear like the rest of them. During the course of the play, he falls in love with a woman who was born with the ability to hear but is losing it as a result of a disease that she's withstanding. So she is going gradually deaf. At the point we meet her in the play, she is almost completely deaf. And she introduces Billy to the world of people who cannot hear and teaches him sign language. And it's about how he and his family need to reconcile this parting and reestablish what their relationships can be when he steps outside of the role into which they have cast him all of his life. It's a fabulous, stunning play where this family tugs at your heart, and we'll be bringing in a guest actor for the central role, who will be an actor who is deaf from birth, to star in that role for us. So that person will bring that to our company.
I'm glad to hear that you can do that, reached out to a deaf actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and we'll be, working with some people in the community and some people throughout the state. Also, just, it's a really great opportunity for our students to experience something that's different for them, and we hope for our community to meet some new people.
I wonder how many of the incoming class will actually, or currently enrolled, do have some familiarity with signing.
Well, Western has a pretty expansive sign language program, so we actually probably have a dozen students in our department who can sign, because they have chosen to take the classes. So we're just a small percentage of the people who take the ASL classes here at Western. So there's a fair number of people across campus who can sign.
And frequently we've done productions where we've had them interpreted for deaf with sign, not just Western, but the Civic does it as well. I think Farmers Alley has done a couple of productions that way.
Frequently a show will designate a performance because it's expensive. Where they will have a sign interpreter, or if we know that someone is specifically coming to see a show and makes that request of us, we will also accommodate in that way.
I've always loved watching the interpreters.
There was an amazing video on YouTube this week of a woman who was signing a rap concert. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Everyone should find it. It's stunning. Even the performer is amazed at her ability. So it's they're tremendously talented, not in their ability
and
to.
And they're actors too. I mean, they're
playing every part in the play. Really,
they usually when I've had them come in and sign a show that I've directed, they come and they watch a performance. They decide, you know, who's playing who, and they don't just sign it. I mean, they are acting all of the roles in the play or musical.
Right. It's not like bad delayed closed captions that sometimes.
No, it's stunning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Joan, you're directing Tribes.
I'm directing
starting
Tribes.
March 13th. The Western Michigan University Theater season is available to browse right now at the website wmutheater.com. And there's a lot of social media that you can follow with the theater department, and they'll keep you up to date with each production as it comes along. Finally, the end of season musical.
It's the end of season. It's so sad.
It's beautiful.
Have a nice summer, Joan.
It's a beautiful closing.
It's a beautiful closing.
Very excited about the closing show.
I'm always excited about Sondheim in any form.
This Sunday, we'll be producing Sunday in the Park with George, opening April 3rd. And I have to say, this is one of my very favorite musicals that I've never had the opportunity to actually direct, although I teach it frequently in my classes. I use scenes from it. I use this as an example for script analysis. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece about an artist who is struggling to be understood, struggling to express himself. It is a fictional interpretation on the life of Georges Seurat, the famous expressionistic painter from the late 19th century, and his fictional relationship with a young woman model named Dot. And that's the first act. And then the second act is his great-great-grandson, who is now kind of a visionary artist here in the United States, who is also struggling with the idea of staying current and staying new and always kind of moving forward in his art. So the first act is about Georges Seurat, who has a vision, is very clear with what he wants to do, and no one understands him. And the second act is about a very successful artist who feels that he is stagnating. He's not moving forward. He's not creating something new. He's no longer adventuring, and he's just kind of living on his laurels, and which are two consistent issues with artists. And one of the things that makes this piece so universal is that it's a metaphor for all of us. That it's not just about an artist. It's about anyone who faces kind of life's choices and whether you kind of live for your dreams and you act in your dreams but people don't necessarily understand what you're trying to say, or you find yourself successful but stagnating, and how do you constantly find a vision and a future and you know, keep those dreams alive. The music is gorgeous. It's one of Sondheim's most stunning scores. Again, the costumes will be beautiful. And of course, it's inspired by
scenery,
a painting that you can go see in the Chicago... In Chicago, at the Chicago Art Institute, Sunday Afternoon on the Island of Grandjet is the painting, and it's in the Art Institute here in Chicago. And it's Georges Seurat is famous for pointillism, which is an expressionistic art form where the idea is that he paints in primary colors, in tiny little dots, and your eye and the light combine to create all the multiple colors that you see in the painting. And Sondheim's score is representative of that pointillistic art school. So he has created a score almost of tiny little notes that
but not too
kind
many.
Of combine to create this very lush, beautiful score. It's moving and gorgeous. One of the things that we're doing that's a little unique with this, one, I want to say something about our music director, Brent Decker, who does all of our musicals now, and he's actually finishing up his season at the Barn as we speak. And this is a really challenging show for him musically, both working with the singers as well as with the orchestra to really be true to the Sondheim score. And I'm looking forward to the work he's going to do on the show. And the last thing I wanted to say about the piece that's going to make it a little more interesting, perhaps, I've been teaching this piece for years and frequently using a scene where they sing the song "We Do Not Belong Together." It's kind of George and Dot's breakup scene in Act One. And one of the things I've discovered is that there are many interpretations of these two characters that work, that are legitimate to the author's intent. And there's no kind of one true way of playing either of these characters. And in fact, it's been reinforced because I recently went to New York went to Lincoln Center doing some research, and I watched the recent revival with Jake Gyllenhaal playing George. And his interpretation is completely different from Mandy Patinkin, who originated the role. Very, very different. Both of them fantastic and completely different Georges. So we're going to be double casting the roles of George and Dot. And when I'm rehearsing the piece, I'm going to rehearse with one George and Dot, and then they'll be on break the next day, and I'll rehearse with the other George and Dot, and they're not going to watch each other rehearse. And they are going to have pretty divergent, I'm imagining, interpretations of the role. So you, as an audience member, could come on Friday night, see one performance, and come again on Saturday night and feel like you're seeing an entirely different play, because their interpretations of the role are going to be based on the actor and what they're bringing to the character. And I'm excited to kind of discover the show in two different ways.
Another reason why the university setting and university years are some of the most exciting and most creative time periods for young people. And as professors, you know, you can bring forth dreams in this setting.
No, it's a great gift for us to be able to do work with these incredibly talented young artists. I mean, they're just amazing. They're terrific. Their commitment, their skill. So it's just a joy. It's just a joy to be in the room with them.
Well, shall we leave it right there? That's a nice way to end our chat today, unless there are any further details or...
No, come see us in the theater. Let's talk.
I don't understand completely.
I'm not surprised.
But he combines all these different trends.
I'm not surprised.
You can't divide our today into categories neatly.
Oh.
What matters is the means, not the ends.
I'm not surprised.
That is the state of the art, my dear. That is the state of the art.
It's not enough knowing good from rotten.
You're telling me.
When something new pops up every day.
You're telling me.
It's only new, though, for now.
Nouveau.
But yesterday's forgotten.
And tomorrow is already passé.
There's no surprise.
That is the state of the art, my friend. That is the state of the art.
He's an original.
Was.
I like the images.
Some.
Come on, you had your moment, now it's George's turn.
It's George's turn, I wasn't talking
tender.
Do you think he's original?
Well, yes.
But is it really new?
Well, no.
It's more than novelty.
Well, yes.
It's just promotion,
but that is the state of the art, isn't it? Well.
Art isn't easy.
Even when you've amassed it.
Fighting for prizes.
No one can be an oracle.
Art isn't easy.
Suddenly, you're past it.
All compromises.
And then when it's allegorical.
Art isn't easy.
Art isn't easy.
Art isn't easy.
All right, George, as long as it's your night, George, you know what's in the room, George, another chromaloom, George, it's time to get to work.
George, I want you to meet one of our board members. This is Harriet Pauling.
What a pleasure. And this is my friend, Billy Webster.
How do you do?
Well, I'll just leave you three to chat.
Oh.
Say cheese, George, and put them at their ease, George. You're up on the trapeze, George. Machines don't grow on trees, George. Start putting it together.
This is the third piece of yours I've seen. They're getting so large.
Art isn't easy, even when you're hot.
Are these inventions of yours one of a kind?
Advancing art is easy, yes. Financing it is not. A vision's just a vision if it's only in your head. If no one gets to see it, it's as good as dead. It has to come to light. I put the names of my contributors on the side of each machine.
How clever.
Bit by bit, putting it together. Piece by piece, only way to make a work of art. Every moment makes a contribution. Every little detail plays a part. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. Putting it together, That's what counts.
The board of the foundation is meeting next week.
Ounce by ounce, putting it together.
You'll come to lunch.
Small amounts, adding up to make a work of art. First of all, you need a good foundation, otherwise it's risky from the start. Takes a little cocktail conversation, but without the proper preparation, having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. The art of making art is putting it together, bit by bit.
Oh, we haven't met. Charles Redmond, County Museum of Texas. Wanted you to know we're in the process of giving out some sizable commissions.
Link by link, well, making the connections.
Business during a social occasion.
Drink by drink, fixing and perfecting the design. Adding just a dab of politician, always knowing where to draw the line. Lining up the funds, but in addition, lining up a prominent commission. Otherwise your perfect composition isn't going to get much exhibition. Art isn't easy. Every minor detail is a major decision. Have to keep things in scale, have to hold to your vision. Every time I start to feel defensive, I remember lasers are expensive. What's a little cocktail conversation if it's going to get you your foundation, leading to a prominent commission and an exhibition in addition?
Art isn't easy.
Trying to make connections.
Who understands it?
Difficult to evaluate.
Art isn't easy.
Time for collection.
Always in transit.
Is that when you have to collaborate?
Art isn't easy. Any way you look at it.
George, hello. Lee Randall. I handle the public relations for the museum.
Dot by dot, leading up the image. Shot by shot, keeping it a distance doesn't pay. Still, if you remember your objective, not give all your privacy away. A little bit of hype can be effective, long as you can keep it in perspective. After all, without some recognition, no one's going to give you a commission. Art isn't easy. Overnight, you're a trend. You're the right combination. Then the trend's at an end. You're suddenly last year's sensation. If you feel a sense of coalition, then you never really stand alone. If you want to work to reach fruition, what you need's a link with your tradition, and of course a prominent commission. Plus a little formal recognition, so that you can go on exhibition, so that your work can go on exhibition.
There's the man of the hour.
Blair, hello. I read your piece on Neo-Expressionism.
Good for you.
Well, what did you think?
George, Chromolume number 7.
Be nice, George.
I was hoping it would be a series of 3, 4 at the most.
You have to pay a
I've
price,
talked to
George.
I've from the beginning, you know that. You were really on to something.
They like to give advice, George. Advice.
Now they're just
don't
becoming
think about
more
it twice,
about
George.
Less and less.
I disagree.
Now don't get me wrong. You're a talented guy. But I think you're capable of far more.
Be new, George. They tell you to the blue, George. You're new or else you're through, George. And even if it's true, George, you do what you can do. Bit by bit, putting it together. Piece by piece, working out the vision night and day. All it takes is time and perseverance, with a little luck along the way. Putting in a personal appearance, gathering supporters and adherents.
But he combines all these different trends.
Mapping out the right configuration, starting with a suitable foundation.
Is it original?
Was. Planning up a prominent commission and an exhibition in addition. Hear a little dab of politician.
I like the signatures. Touch of publication.
What? We have a balanced composition. It depends on preparation. Even if you do have the suspicion that it's taking all your concentration. The art of making art is putting it together. Bit by bit. Link by link. Drink by drink. Mink by mink.
And that is the state of the art.